We're holding at the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, chapter 11. We saw at the end of Perek Yud that Perek Yud was basically mostly Stephanie Yisrael sinned, served of Elazara, and they were oppressed, and they did tshuva. And then at the very end of the Perek, Hashem, you know, basically, the prophet describes that Hashem was ready to forgive them, to save them, and it ends off that Bnei Yisrael gathers and they say, last pasuk, Perek pasuk Yud Ches of the previous chapter, is Ayomer Ha'am, sorry, Gilad Yisrael Re'ehu. The nation, the officers of Gilad, said each one to his friend, Mi Yisrael Yochel, we welcome the Amon, who is the person that will begin to fight against Bnei Amon, he will be the leader for all of the dwellers of Gilad. Which brings us right into chapter 11. The Yitzchak Kagiladi Hayah Gibor Chayah. And Yitzchak, the Giladite, he was very strong. Vehu ben Isha Zona. And he was the son of a Zona. Usually means a prostitute. Vayolad Gilad is Yitzchak. And Gilad gave birth to Yitzchak. So it describes who Yitzchak was, who his mother was, and then it says, and Gilad gave birth to Yitzchak.
Sire.
Good point.
No.
Now, what does this mean that she was a Zona? So, some of Farshim understand it Kipchuto, as it says, Mitzvah David seems to understand it, that, yep, she was just a prostitute, and he, Gilad, apparently fathered Yitzchak from this woman, but yet the Pasuk testifies by Yoled Gilad as Yitzchak, that it was, that he was the father, that Gilad was in fact the father of Yitzchak. Others understand the Radak, I think, and others, that it means she was a Pileges, she was a concubine. It refers to her as a Zona because she doesn't have, a concubine doesn't have a ksuba, she doesn't have kedushin. It's not as firm of a marriage, let's say, as a typical marriage, and so that's why she's referred to as a Zona. And the last shot offered by the Mefarshim is that she wasn't... She didn't do anything wrong. She wasn't doing anything wrong. She was from a different stavet. And she was a woman who was going to inherit her father's property. And by marrying a man outside of her stavet, she was basically selling her the property from that stavet. So she was giving it away to another shevet for marriage. So they call her a Zona, that she was, you know, giving up that shevet property to another shevet for marriage. And this is the Rabbag here brings this idea, and the Rabbeinu Bechaye also, Ala Torah, says the same thing, I believe. Pasuk Beis, Vatelet Eishes Gilad Lo Bonet. And the wife of Gilad gave birth to sons for Gilad. Vayigdalu v'nei ha'isha vayigarshu es Yitzchak. And the sons got older, and they were megarish, they exiled Yitzchak. Vayomru lo, and they said to him, Lo simcha b'veis avinu, you will not inherit in our father's house. Ki ben isha acheres ata, because you are another woman. Son. So here we see, it seems, the implication is that Gilad, that Yitzchak was the oldest, because after he was born, then Vatelet Eishes Gilad Lo Banim, then the wife of Gilad gave birth to sons to Gilad, and when they got older and were old enough now to impose their power or their strength against Yitzchak, then they kicked them out. And they said, you will not inherit, So if you understand that she was really a zona, then out of respect for their father, they just described her as Isha Acheres. You were the mother. Your mother is another woman. You are the son of another woman, and you're not going to inherit with us. We'll come back to these sukkim, and after we see a few more to give an overall interpretation of what's going on here.
They weren't talking to their father.
They were not talking to their father.
So there's no guarantee that he would have even heard their language.
Okay, that's true, but still speak out of respect, even when he's not there. I don't know if that's...
They're driving him out. They have no legal right to do so. You'd think they'd find stronger words, at least a stronger ground. Another woman could have been a lawful concubine. They would have had no legal right to drive him out.
Right, so that's a good point. So...
So you think they would have found other words.
Right.
Instead of Isha Acheres.
So the Malbim, who understands that she was a concubine, says that they were doing this was Shaloka Ding. It was improper for on two accounts. First of all, a son of a Puegis does inherit, just as other sons do.
Right.
And just the violence of it. The even if he wasn't supposed to inherit, but to kick him out, to exile him, to act violently against him was obviously unacceptable. But even still, Yibrach Yiftach mipnei Echav, and Yiftach fled from his brothers, by Yesev be'eret Tov, and he settled in the land of Tov, of good, of Tov. We'll have to talk about why that's called Tov. By Yitzvaketu al Yiftach anoshim reikim, and empty men gathered towards Yiftach. And they went out with him to fight, to get food, or to scavenge. They joined, they created a band of men with Yitzchak. Now, Eret Tov, what is this place? By Yeshiv Eret Tov, who dwelled and settled in the land of Tov. So, some understand that was just the master of the land was named Tov. So it's called Eret Tov. Related to that, the fellow in Megillas Rus, which occurs, the story of Rus, we're going to have one of our next Shoftim is going to be Ibsan, who the Gemara says was Boaz. So we're getting into time period in which Rus occurs. But one of the people in the story of Rus is Tov. Plony Almoni is referred to as, but he's also referred to as Tov, it seems. So the guy who was supposed to buy the field from Nami and marry Rus. He didn't want to marry Rus. So some of us understand that it's the same guy. That this land belonged to that same Tov, and that's what it's referring to. Now, why would he go there? Why would he go to the land of Tov? So, the only thing I've said, he has a number of approaches, but following this approach, that Tov was the same Tov from the story of Rus. So, he says that the reason why he chose to run to Tov was because we find that Boaz in Rus told Tov to redeem the field and redeem Rus, to marry Rus. And he said, well, ask this as Nachalasi, I don't want to destroy my inheritance. Meaning that if I have children through Rus, then they're going to want to inherit with my other children. And therefore, and I don't want my inheritance going to Ruth, to her children, to a Moabite. Whatever reason, he didn't want that.
Yeah, but that's good.
So, So he says, therefore, that's what he meant, lo aspis is nachalati, I won't destroy my inheritance, meaning send my inheritance to these children from Ruth. And therefore, Yiftach wanted to go to his to him, because he we see that he agreed in principle that every son has the right to inherit. And therefore he went, I don't know what the purpose was, doesn't really say what would be gained by this, but this was someone who agreed in principle that Yiftach should have the right to inherit.
Just as an ally.
Exactly. Just as Tov understood that if he would have children from Ruth, they would inherit, so he would understand that Yiftach has a right to inherit just as much as his other brothers.
So why didn't Poloni Almoni want to take Ruth? I never understood. How would it endanger his own inheritance?
So according to this, he's not worried about his own inheritance.
He's worried about his children?
Yeah. He doesn't want the inheritance to go to the children of Ruth.
Why? I mean, they'd be his kids.
Doesn't explain. But this is an interpretation I've never heard. But
that's no explanation at all. I mean, it just doesn't explain anything.
I mean, we can conjecture that
he didn't want a Moabite.
I mean, that's the that's Rashi there, that he didn't want to. He held that Moaviv, lo Moavis, lo Moavis, that you can't marry even a Moabite woman, even though it was Paskin that you could. But this is a new approach, that he didn't want his inheritance going through the children that he would have from Ruth. Now, there's an interesting Yerushalmi, which is commented on, which is about this Eretz Tov. The Yerushalmi says, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Eretz Tov Zus Susita. There was a land called Susita. The Lama Nikri Shema Tov, then why do they refer to it as Eretz Tov? They said because it's Tov Shepsura Min Amaisa. It's good because it's exempt from taking mice from your grain, because it was in Chutzar. It was outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore maybe it was close by, but yet, you know, you could be close by and still be exempt from taking mice. So they called it Tov because of that. Now,
exempt from taxes.
It's basically. So, you know, it's a no state tax. So the Mepharshim struggle to understand this. What does it mean that, why would that be good? Why would that be a good thing? In fact, the way the Harzi asks the question, somewhere in the file. The Yerushalmi, in the same Masechta, darshins, learns out from the pasuk, "Vehitivcha v'hirbcha me'avosecha," and I will do good for you. That we learn from there that you'll be more obligated in trumus than maaser. That's the Yerushalmi comment, that the good that Hashem promises to do is that you'll be more obligated in trumus than maaser. Like, it's a good thing to have the mitzvah. And really, right, we have the concept of Yechananya ben Akashya, on there, Ratzak HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'zakos Yesh Yisrael. He wanted to give us merit, so he gave us many mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are good. It's not a good thing to be exempt from a mitzvah. As well, the Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, he wanted to enter Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says in Sota, why did Moshe Rabbeinu desire to go into Eretz Yisrael so badly? But did he just want to eat from the fruit? Alakach Amar Moshe, he said, there are many mitzvahs that we have which can only be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. And that's why he had such a taiva to go into Eretz Yisrael, because he was missing out on mitzvot. So how can we refer to this place that's in Kutlaritz as Tov because it's exempt from Maisa? So Chaim Kanievsky gives a very simple explanation, which is that they called it Tov because the people there were Yarei Shamayim. They had fear of heaven, and the reason why they chose to dwell there, because they were exempt from the mitzvah, is because they were worried about the mitzvah. They were worried about not fulfilling the mitzvah properly. They were worried that they might come to Hevel, which I think is either Nasi of Misa, Bidei Shamayim. So he says it's comparable to the Gemara in Ksuvos, which describes a certain family that I believe they didn't have normal menstrual cycles. Somehow they didn't have to worry as much about, I don't know, it doesn't bring what their condition was, but Nida wasn't such a worry for them. And the Gemara says, you know, they're fortunate that they don't have to worry about that. So whatever the exact condition was. But that, in a way, if you're exempt from a mitzvah, then, or not just a mitzvah, but a potential iser, because with the mitzvah meister comes a very chamor, a very stringent iser, which is tevel. And therefore, these people were fearful of that, and they chose to live in the Kutlaritz. So, on the one hand, they'll miss out from the mitzvah, but on the other hand, they'll be protected from this avera. Now, that's, I think, the most simple approach. The Tzvi Pesach Frank has an interesting answer. He says, really, we find in all of Mikra that Eretz Yisrael is described in Bulasam Nekeva, in the feminine, as Tova, with a hey at the end. For example,
what's in the benching?
Yes.
That is Chemda Tova.
Exactly, you bring that as one of the examples. All right, Chemda Tova. Right? It's Tova with a hey, feminine. Also, that pasuk about Moshe Rabbeinu that the Gemara is going on, Ebra na der es haaret hatova. Let me pass and let me see the eret hatova. And in by Kalev, he describes that the Meraglim, Tova haaret, no, the land is very good, Tova again. So we find also there by the Meraglim, Urisem es haaret mah. You'll see the land, what it is, what it looks like. And again, in feminine, Mahi. So what was bothering Yerushalmi ben Levi in Yerushalmi was, why is this land called Tov without a hay? If Eretz Yisrael is always referred to as Tova. And therefore, he understood the reason must be because it's Tura Min HaMaiser. Why? So, first of all, you can say something like, it must not be Eretz Yisrael. But also, he says, anytime you have a chaser in the Torah, a letter that's missing, it's coming to tell you that there's something less here, there's something missing here, something lacking. So, for example, the Gemara in Ksubos on the word Na'ara, which is a young girl, it's written in some places Na'ar, without the hey, but still pronounced Na'ara. Because, and it comes to include whatever it's dealing with there, a katana. Now, even if she's younger, so okay, I don't really fully understand that example, but he says that's why it's missing a hay here, to show that there's something missing here, which is
a katana.
No, I'm not sure what he's referring to there, because it sounds like
she can't get married yet.
I'm not sure, because he says it comes to include also a katana, she's even younger, so I'm not sure how that would fit into what he's saying. But he says that Right, missing a hay to show that there's something missing. And then he adds a quote from someone, Baruch Epstein, that the hay is showing that there's five things missing, actually. That missing five things, Truma, Meister Rishon and Meister Sheni, Meister Ani, and Chala and Bikurim. Really, two of those go together because they're not simultaneous. There's Meister Rishon is, there's Truma, there's Meister Rishon, then there's Meister Sheni and Meister Ani, which are done in, on not on, on the same year. Then there's Chala and Bikurim. There's five main mitzvot that are performed only on the crops of Eretz Yisrael, all these different kinds of tithes, and five mitzvot, that's what the missing hay is. And in fact, they then quote in the footnote here that we find a similar thing in a brisa in Yuma with regards to something else. The pasuk says in Haggai, it says va'erze bo va'achavda, but it's missing a hay. I'll desire them and him, and I will honor him. But achabed is written with achabda is written without the hay. So the brisa says, why is it missing the hay? It's because there were five. It's talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. There were five things missing in the second Beis HaMikdash, and it goes on to say what they were. Five things that didn't exist by the first Beis HaMikdash that existed by the second Beis HaMikdash. So we see this idea that a missing hay can. We have a brisa that tells us that a missing hay might mean that there are five things missing. It says, "See Pesach Frank," so that's why. That's how the Yerushalmi knew that the Rebbe Levi understood that Eretz Tov refers to a place that's exempt from Meisner. Really, it's exempt from five things. Now, and that's why it's called Tov. So Tov, I guess, you know, isn't really so good. It's just been compared to Tova. Now, there's Tova, which even has the five things on the Tov. It's not really as good. The only thing I've did has a little bit of a more, Kabbalistic approach, as is Kedarko. So he says, why is it called Tov? Because it's exempt from Meiser. So he says that all the land gets Shefa, gets an overflow of Bracha from Shivam is Sarsim, from servants of Hashem, basically from celestials, from agents that Hashem is putting in motion. That's how other lands receive their bracha. However, Eretz Yisrael receives its bracha from the moon, from the Levana. Now, we know, he says, that the Levana, the moon, only gets its light from the sun in the first place.
Do they know that in Eretz Yisrael?
I assume, but I'm not sure. I don't know. Probably.
The Greeks probably realized this. By the way, the Greeks knew that all that the Earth and the Moon were spheres.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. They knew that they were spherical. They didn't think anything was flat.
So the Levana, he says, is like, the moon is like an ani, like a poor person who receives, you know, receives tzedakah from the sun, like a poor person receives from the rich. That's what the pasuk refers to, the pasuk refers to Eretz Yisrael as Eretz Asher Lo B'Mishkan Nus Tocha Bal Lechem. It won't eat bread through miskenus, through poverty. Meaning, even though it's star, its constellation that's over it is poor, is the moon, and therefore fruit shouldn't grow in Eretz Yisrael. It's like because it's being provided by the poor moon, but comes HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his own, which through no agents and directly delivers to Eretz Yisrael. He's directly Mashiach to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why he says the fruit of Eretz Yisrael are chayav in Meiser and Truma more than any other place, because we're getting directly from Eretz Yisrael. There's an extra from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's an extra kedusha to the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. He says it's known that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Chemda Tova. So he points this out. It's called Tova. And Chutz La'aretz is called Eretz Tov in this pasuk. And the reason is because the moon receives its light from the sun. It's like a nekeva. It's like a female who, he says, no talis pras mibala, receives presents from her husband, maybe on a more physiological level. Also, she's the receiver, and therefore it's called, it's referred to as feminine, because it's constellation the moon receives from the sun. Because its constellation is like in the cave and that it receives. That's also another reason why Eretz Yisrael is obligating in Meiser. To show this idea that just as an ani, a poor person, receives from a rich person, and the kocha, the star, the constellation of Eretz Yisrael, receives its sefa from the rich, from the sun. So therefore, you have to take from the fruit of Eretz Yisrael and do the same thing, and, you know, sort of return the favor and give it to a Kohen going to receive it from the rich person, or like a poor person receives from a rich person. Not as opposed to in Kutzlar, outside of Eretz Yisrael, that it gets its shefa, it gets it's provided by the sun itself directly, so therefore, and it doesn't get from other things, it's not a tzedakah, therefore it's exempt from Meiser as well. And that's why Kutzlaris is called Tov, without the additional hay, and Eretz Yisrael is called Tova, with the hay. Blessing the Teva, because of its constellation, the Levana, that receives its Shefa from the sun. That's also interesting on this, you know, following this, that we, in general, we follow the moon for as our, you know, for our time follows the moon, while the other nations follow the sun, most of them. So, also maybe fits in that Kutzlaret sort of is run by the sun, and Eretz Yisrael is run by the moon.
Except we correct by the sun.
What's that?
We correct our calendars to match the sun.
Right.
That's our training.
As opposed to our friends, our brothers.
Yeah,
our
who don't correct at all, and so their calendars constantly the wrong season.
Yeah.
Actually, the Jewish calendar is also slipping.
Really?
It needs correction.
Huh.
By about 18 days.
Really?
And nobody has the guts. Like, nobody has broad enough shoulders to make it correct.
You have to wait till it's 30 days correction, and then just add another month. A double, an extra leap month.
Take out an Adar.
Then don't do... But which way does it need correction? You need to add or you need to subtract?
I don't know.
Okay, so either you have to wait until it needs 12 more days of correction and add an extra leap month, or you need to wait till our calendar says to have a leap month and not and skip it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to look it up. If you're interested, I'll look it up.
Perhaps.
Right, but it's definitely slipping.
Interesting. Okay, continuing on here. Pasuk Dalet, so fine. So he goes to this place, Eretz Tov. He's joined by Anasim Reitim. By the way, the Gemara in Baba Kama, it says, like, how do you know? It gives the expression that, like, you know, the bad tree attracts bad roots or something like that, some sort of. And it says, because look, Yitzchak attracted the Reitim, the empty ones. You see, like, a bad. It sounds like it's saying you see a bad person attract. You know, riffraff attracts riffraff. So,
couldn't it just mean people who have nothing to their name? Poor people?
Rakin as in poor. Could be. In general, when the word Rakin, for sure in the Chazal,
means deficient.
Yeah, it means like you have nothing, like deficient in knowledge. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky again wonders, like the Gemara refers to Yiftach as it says, Shmuel Kedaro, Yiftach Kedaro, Shmuel, his generation, like if you only have whoever your Navi is in your time, but you know, he's not exactly riffraff. So he says, yeah, but they, again, because he had a reason for fleeing to this place, and to Eretz Tov, but they thought he was coming because he wanted to be, you know, get out of Meister. So they thought that he was a, you know, mitzvah skipper, and they gathered towards him, but really he had his own reasons why he was running to Chutzlar. Okay. So it says, Vayehi miyamim, and it was after a period of time, Pasuk Dalet, Vayirachamu b'nei Amon in Yisrael, and b'nei Amon went to war against Israel. Vayehi kasher nilchamu b'nei Amon in Yisrael, and it was when they went to war with Israel. Vayelchu ziknei Gilad l'akachas es Yiftach me'eretz Tov. And the elders of Gilad went to take Yiftach back from Eretz Tov. They needed him. He was this warrior, he was a leader of a band of men, and all of a sudden, the men of Gilad are coming back for him. And they said to Yiftach, go and be a leader for us. And we will do battle with B'nai Amon. What's
the Kachin? Kachin?
So the Malbim says a Kachin is different than a leader. The Malbim says it comes from the word like the edge, meaning like a front liner. Like they weren't offering him to be their leader, but rather to be their strongest warrior. Come be our strongest warrior.
Champion.
Our champion, right. Come fight on the front line. And, and fight for us. But we're not giving you any power. And others say it does mean asking to be a leader, but the Malbim says no, it just means to be our champion. What's Yiftach's response? Hayomer Yiftach Uzikne Gilad, and Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, Hago Atem, do you have Shinesem or Sinesem? Sinesem, yeah, I have a typo here. Sinesem Osi, you hated me, Vatigarshuni, you based Avi, and you exiled me from my father's house. Umadua Basem Eli Ata, Kasher Shailachem, and why have you come to me now when you're in difficult times after you kicked me out, and now you're coming back to ask me for help?
Those half brothers must have been among the elders.
Good question. Good question. Before it was brothers who seemed to be kicking him out, and now we have the elders coming to retrieve him, and he's saying, you kicked me out. So we'll have to deal with that. The Malbim says, he's telling them, why are you coming and offering me, you know, to be the cousin, to be the champion, as if it's, you're coming because of my own chashivas, you're just coming because you need me. Sinesim, so you hated me, you kicked me out. He said, if you would come to me, if you were coming to me when things were peaceful, so then I would forgive you. But you're coming. Kasher Sarlochem, when you're in trouble, and this isn't out of love, it's because you're forced to, and why should I come and help you for nothing? You haven't even really offered me anything. Vayomru, Ziknei Gilad El Yiftach, and the elders of Gilad said to Yiftach, Lachain, therefore, Atta Shavnu Elecha, for this reason we have now come to you, The last imanu, and you'll go with us, the Nilchamta Bibne Amon, and you'll fight against Amon, the Hayisa Lanu Lerosh Lechol Yosef Gilad. And then you'll be the leader of all of Gilad.
All right, so now they've upped their...
They've upped it. However, the Malbim says they're still not giving, they're still not offering him to be the leader yet. They're saying, if you fight for us and you win and you're victorious, then we will appoint you as our leader. Which to which he responds, Vayomer Yiftach El Zikne Gilad. In the Shiva Matamosi we lachim Bivnei Amon. If you place me to fight against Bnei Amon, Vinasang Hashem Osam Lifanai, and Hashem gives them into my hands, Anochi Eye Lochem Lerosh. I'm going to be your leader because I'm going to have earned it. Not because you are offering me anything. If I in fact go out and fight and I'm victorious, so then yes, I'll be your leader. What exactly are you offering me? What are you promising me? Of course, the champion becomes the leader. And he was saying, if you want me to come, you got to make me the leader right now. That would be an offer. By offering that if I win, if I'm victorious, I'll be your leader, that's not, you're not offering me anything. That's automatic. Malbim says he was asking to be placed, to be appointed as the leader already now.
But that's not what he says.
Meaning?
He says, Imashivim Hashem Oti, Vehilachem Yibnei Amon, Vehnot Fon, Hashem Osam, Vefanai Anochi, Eyeo.
The Nasang Hashem Osam Lefanai, Hashem gives them the Amon before me. Then I will be your leader. But
will be if I win.
Exactly. That's how the Malbim sees it.
And right, but that's what Yiftach is saying.
Right. So the Malbim saying, Yiftach is saying that I'll be anyway. You're not offering me anything.
So I might as well be your leader now.
No. So therefore, if you're trying to get me to come, or if you want to offer me something, make me the leader now. Because by offering me to become the leader after I'm victorious, you're not actually offering me anything. That I'll have earned on my own. Nothing to do with you.
Okay.
So,
oh, I see. So he's not making a counteroffer. He's making a prediction.
Well, right. But also, it's rhetorical. He's saying...
Yeah. Some offer. If
right.
I win, I'll be a leader anyway.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So...
Right, that wasn't clear from the text, but... Yeah.
That's the Malbim's approach.
Right,
so
the sarcasm wasn't noted.
Right. I have that problem with text messages also. So I saw brought down from a sefer Nasan Chochma Lishlomo, which I was trying to look up who the author was. I couldn't find it where I thought it was in here. That might be in my other sefer. But he basically has one piece on all of sefer Sofim, I think, and it's on these stuff in here. And it's a nice approach to what's going on. So going back to Pasuk Aleph. So the Pasuk says, Vayoled Gilad es Yiftach, and Gilad sired Yiftach. Now, who's this Gilad? Up till now, we've had the Yoshe Gilad, we've had the people of Gilad. Who is Gilad? It's not the name of a person. It's the name of a place, of an area. And we have Yair HaGiladi back in the last parak. Eretz Gilad, the land of Gilad. Who's Gilad? That's the first question. Secondly, when they said, you're not going to inherit, he says, was this proper? Was this within the law? Or were they outside the law? We brought the Malbim. The Malbim said it was against the law. He was really boasting Herod. He says, what does it mean, Ben Isha Acheret, Pasuk Seif? Like we wondered about, why do the brothers refer to the mother of Yiftach as Isha Acheret, another woman?
Why are they missing their words?
Right. And lastly, what's going on in this change that the Zakenim first offer him to be Katzin, to be the leader, and then they say, oh, you could be the Rosh, the Katzin, you could be the champion, and then they change it and they say you could be the leader. What's going on with all this? So he says, we can understand all of this in the context of the Parsha in the Torah with regards to inheritance. Like it says, when a man will have two wives, one is loved and one is hated. Now, Chazal say, well, okay, so that's the part. So there it says, the part that it says, you can't favor the Ben Ahuva, the son of the loved one, in front of the son of the hated one, if the hated one is in fact the Bechor. So he says, he believes that Gilad, Hayolad Gilad is Yiftach, Gilad is a reference to the leader of Gilad. Right, again, Gilad doesn't seem to be a person, it's the land of Gilad. So who is this Gilad? Because it refers to the head of Gilad, the leader. And the leader of Gilad had a son named Yiftach, and they had other sons. Now, as we mentioned, it seems very clear that Yiftach was the Bechor. He was the eldest, because it first describes his birth, then it goes on and says that he had, and Gilad had other sons. So therefore, if Yiftach was the Bechor, so then he should have been the one to inherit his father's position, which we find in various places where the Bechor takes over for the father in the king, but like kingship it's often that way, not always, but often. So he was the inheritor of the leadership, the proper inheritor. Now, he says that we also know from the pasuk that Yiftach mother was not married to his father. Because after it describes that his mother was Rizona, it says, Gilad other sons. And the wife of Gilad had other sons. Sounds like the first woman was not his wife. At most, she was a Pelegah. So therefore, the brothers came and they said, you're not inheriting. Meaning, the position of our father. You cannot inherit the leadership. Yiftach, on the other hand, said, what do you mean? The Pasuk says in the Torah that even if there's a Ben Ahuva or a Ben Tanua, whether you know my mother is a proper mother or not, I'm his son and I should inherit. You can't favor the children of the Ahuva. And he says, he points out that one of the lines here is in Pasuk Zion. When he speaks to the elders of Gilad, he says, Atem Sineisem Osi, you hated me. As in, you treated me like the Sinua of the Pasuk. That you're supposed to, even if I'm the Sinua, but you're supposed to still reward me with the inheritance. He says that he took his case to Basin. His brothers wanted to kick him out. He took his case to Basin. I should inherit. What was the ruling? The ruling that Basin gave, the Zikanan, the Zikne Gilad Paskin, sorry, you are out. You're out of the inheritance.
Why did they do that?
Correctly or incorrectly.
And that's why he hated them when they
approached. That's why they, when they came back, he said to them, you kicked me out. Even though, like you asked, it was his brother. No, but they ultimately gave the psak that he was in fact, not going to inherit his father's position and really, I guess, any inheritance. So, So he says that's also why at first they didn't want to give him the leadership, because they held that he shouldn't have it. So at first they said, okay, you'll be our champion, you know, and he fought them on that. And even though what's noteworthy is that at the end of last parak, it says, whoever will fight against Bnei Amon will be the head, will be the Elorot. That's how the last parak ended.
Right.
And yet, they're coming, they found somebody to fight for them, and they're not offering him the position. They're just offering him to be the champion.
It says, Miha Isasher Yahel.
Right, even to start.
Right, just to start.
Right, who will lead us into battle, he'll be the head. So it seems that in halacha, for whatever reason, they held that he didn't deserve it, and they weren't willing to give it to him. Maybe that would be, you know, it would show that their psak was wrong if they gave it to him, whatever their exact calculation was. But they didn't want to give him that position, and it was only once. If he would be victorious in battle, then they agreed that they would give him the position, because then it would be clear it wasn't because he was inheriting the position, which, you know, they held he didn't deserve to inherit, but rather he had earned it. Maybe if he earned the position, so then if that was very clear, then they would be willing to grant it. A nice approach.
Yeah. Thank you.